Hello, friends.
I'm Taylor.
And I'm Brittany. Together, we are two sisters who are here to help you learn some tips and tricks to help navigate this crazy journey called life.
Okay.
We are on episode 3 of Raising an Anxious Generation.
Yeah, buddy.
We're talking about anxiety in kids. So if you missed our first 2 episodes, the first one we kind of went over what anxiety was like. Has it actually increased? Are we actually seeing greater numbers of anxiety, or is it just greater awareness? And then our second episode kind of dove into like, what does the anxiety cycle look like? What are different types of anxiety? So now we're going to dive into how we as parents create and affect anxiety in our children. Don't feel guilty going into this. We all do it, but we're just going to kind of talk about it. It's normal. Like, we're all going to affect it. So
I think that the hardest part is about talking about this is parents do really take it on themselves, but it's also like, you do the best you can, right? Like, we're all here doing the best we can, fighting the good fight. Like, it's okay. There's no judgment. And it's just understanding to be better.
Yeah. And knowing that like awareness can make you better. So like, as we dive into this, some of you have already heard about attachment theory, some of you haven't, but like knowing that like, this is something that we can help change and affect in our kids. So if you start off one way, like you have tools to help them to create more security and So don't beat yourself up. If you're at first overwhelmed by this, keep listening and we'll talk to you about ways that you can model better things for your kids. So,
Okay. So the first things first, there was a study done, I don't remember what year, I was just trying to Google it, but I think it was in the 90s and the 80s, where they would have mothers bring in their children and the children would give them an emotional reaction and the mom at first would model it back and the kid would get soothed, right? So like if they were shocked or surprised, the mom would then give them a soft face or give an emotional reaction and the kid would then align with the mother's expression that she held on her face, right?
Whether it's like her response
escalated, her response determined how they then responded, right?
Okay,
so
yeah.
She was escalated, escalated. If they were neutral or happy, then the kid would start aligning with the neutral happy, right? And be like, it's okay, you're fine, or like, or things like that.
Then, so the child would respond how the parent did, the mother.
Yeah. Then the child was, the same thing happened. The child was triggered and the parent was told to have a flat affect, meaning don't have any expression at all, blank face, totally, and just stare. And what they noticed was the child would continue to escalate as the parent would show zero emotional response. Does that make sense? So the child would become panicked and more anxious and more fearful the more that the mother would respond. And that's kind of what we have to understand today is children are coming out of the womb with billions of neurosynapses. So they are, it's called pruning, where they're going through life and they're learning and they're getting educated. And then things start to peel off and they start to form brains. That's how the brain has neural pathways. So there's billions of potential for this brain to be formed, which is how kids can learn languages so fast, right? They still have a ton of neural like pathways they could have.
Oh yeah.
So you see some kids speak like 4 or 5 languages because they can, their brain has the capacity for it, right? There's still plasticity. As you get older, they start to die off because they aren't used. So when a baby comes out of the womb, studies show that they immediately are attached to the mom. They come out of the mom. The babies actually think until they're about 2 years old that they are literally the mother. Like
they're one.
Yeah. They don't realize until they're around 2 years old that they are two separate beings, which is why like my son goes around being like gangsy do. He calls himself gangsy, right? It's all about gangsy. He too. And he definitely knows. And he isn't separate from mommy. So he is gangsy takes it. Gangsy. Owns it. Gangsy's tummy, like lately he's been going, it's in my tummy. I'm like, yeah, it's in your tummy. And he's like, I drink it in my tummy. I eat it. It's in my tummy. He's learning that separation, right? Versus my daughter and I are so connected and she thinks that she is me.
Yeah.
And if mommy's gone, then she's not happy. So what happens though is you come out of the womb and then babies are trying to understand the world and they understand it from the mother. So the only reason studies are showing that fathers are trusted is because the mother chooses to trust them. So the baby is looking to the mother to see who they can trust in closest circle or the partner that the mother has, right? So partners are usually accepted by the children because the mother has accepted that partner. And how that mother reacts to that person determines how that baby feels about that person.
Yes. And that carries on through adolescence too. Like it's very...
That's exactly right. So right when they're born, this is the genetic predisposition that we're dealing with. This is literally what we're dealing with for how we are socialized with the world. and that doesn't change. How kids understand and attach to the world and see the world and their viewpoints all comes with parents. That's a heavy load.
That is a heavy load. And there's often times where one parent will carry a greater load than the other parent.
It's usually the parent that birthed the baby. But there's usually a caregiver, right? We very overgeneralize that, but it's true because usually it's the one that can feed the baby, take care of the baby, nurture the baby, and that's when the baby attaches to and sees. And then as it continues going on, that's who they attach to more. So this has a theory. We have done some episodes on this before. It's called attachment theory. So caregiver and child, the concept behind this is how a caregiver takes care of the child then forms their understanding of relationships for the world and their external like ability to build relationships, right? So there's four different styles. There's secure, anxious, preoccupied, dismissive, avoidant, and fearful avoidment, which are disorganized. So based on how your caregiver attaches to you or teaches you about the world or interacts with you determines then how you see your attachment to everybody else.
Yes.
Interesting, and right?
It has a big effect on things, but like if your child has a fearful, avoidant, like attachment theory, you can help with that. There are still ways that you can have this, like,
correct. Yes, which we go into it in that episode. The only reason why we're bringing it up in this episode is because we're trying to set up the scene of how you react and what you do in your life, how you see the world, how you fear the world, your fears, your understandings of it are modeled for your kids, which then model for them how they see and understand the world. That's what we're talking about in this one.
And I think it's really important for parents to recognize this too, just to be like, you hold a lot of power. Like your reactions hold a lot of power for your children. And so if you can get yourself to a more secure state, it will really help your kids. Like it's a really great gift that you can give to your children because their view of the world around them is so easily impressed. If you're in a bad state, your kids are going to be too. Like
if you emotionally regulate, they will emotionally regulate, and if you don't, then they're not going to know that skill very well.
You can't expect something from your kids that you can't model it on your own.
And that's what I think a lot of parents expect sometimes is they expect these really high level skills that they can't even perform and for their children to do the same. And that's been an interesting thing in my job seeing that, because I'm like, you can't even do this, so why should your child be able to do this? It's a really hard skill for any of us to master. But it's been interesting because we have very wide range of children, right? Me and you for ages. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about
14 down to one. That's just for those who are unfamiliar with it. I've got a 14-year-old, Taylor's a 1-year-old. Yeah.
Huge range of development. But I hate creepy Halloween things. They freak me out. They make me anxious. Don't like them.
We've never liked them. We've never been around.
Bad juju. Never liked them. Never a thing, right? My mom doesn't like them. We just don't vibe with them. My husband loves the creepy side of Halloween, which I'm like, why? And he thinks like the scary stuff, he's so fine with it. He's so just like, what a big deal, whatever. Like, just walk past. So when my son was little, I was like, crap, there's scary Halloween stuff. He's going to get scared. And my son would go up and just be like, huh. And he would just stare. And then last year, there was like these jumpy out ones. There was all these like different types of Halloween, like creepy things by these houses in the markets that we go to downstairs. Sorry, my dog just clawed the door and it freaked me out. I was talking about Halloween stuff.
Scary.
I was like, oh, this is cool. So we were downtown Snohomish and we were walking past this house and it had like all the jump scare Halloween, the Chucky and all these characters. And my husband walks my son over. I'm like, Madsen, don't do that. And he goes, okay, thanks. That's how it works. And he was like showing him how it works and totally fine. You know, the thing popped out and my son just walks up super brave, like, okay, let's see how it works. And he was like, totally fine. Didn't faze him at all. Didn't even care. And it dawned on me right then, it's because his dad modeled for him how to react and he had no reaction. That's how we get those kind of things, is because daddy had deemed it safe. Daddy was protecting him, but daddy also modeled, like, I don't have a reaction, so there's an EV reaction. And I'm over here, literally, I have my daughter in her shoulder, right? And I'm just, like, dying inside, like, don't take him up to that creepy stuff. And, you know, like, my husband's like, take, pull it in. So I did. I, like, went blank-faced, right? And then my son was able to explore and do all that he wanted to. But I think that's the thing that we're missing sometimes when we don't realize my reaction could have totally changed that interaction for my son, and he could have had a really big diversion to Halloween stuff like I do, but he doesn't. And that's interesting. Yeah. Because he has two parents on a very different spectrum of that, you know? So I think that is a very basic way to describe what we're talking about here, is how you model your response is going to determine how they then respond. An opposite effect, though, like my son had a hurt foot one day and I had to rush him to the doctors, and I came home and he was still limping and I was like trying to rush him out. My daughter was screaming because she's hungry. My husband was grabbing her something and he accidentally spilled a smoothie all over the floor in our fridge. And it was apocalyptic because his reaction was, you know, and then my son was crying because he was already kind of scared about having to go to the doctor, and my daughter just lost it. So then all three of them at the same time, just, and it was like dominoes, girl, just watching how daddy had it was very basic too. It wasn't a big deal. It was just like,
not a big deal, but yeah.
No, but then it just dominoed into this panic level. And I was just standing there like, okay. And then they all modeled after me after. I was like, and we're fine. It's okay. You know, and then they all started to go in a line with me. So it's crazy how you can see it turn whichever way we want it to turn.
Yeah. And they're very, like, they're quick to respond on things. Like, the way that they'll learn it for things. Like, if you have a reaction when they over spilt milk, right, or the spilt smoothie, and then you kind of freak out about it, then they'll do it. But then if you stay calm the next time and it's like, it's all right, let's get some paper towels. Like, and they will remember that. Whichever one is the more consistent in their lives is what they'll latch onto. If it's, oh, mom doesn't cry over spilt milk, or mom freaks out over spilt milk, like, they'll respond that way. It's a consistent pattern and behavior is what they will latch onto.
It was interesting that you say that, because, like, I've really trained Banks to say, it's okay, no big deal. Like, if something happens, no big deal. Anytime something happens, it's okay, mama, no big deal. No big deal. So I know something broke when he said,
he's like, he breaks it. Yeah, like, what was it? There was a Santa thing and he was like kind of freaking out, and like around Christmas. I can't remember what it was that he broke, but I remember his reaction was, it's okay, it's okay, it's no big deal. It's okay, it's no big deal. It's okay, no big deal. And he's like freaking out because he really wanted this like Santa thing or whatever it was to be okay, or try, I don't remember what it was, but he knew that it was like, crap, this actually isn't okay. But he's like, no. If I say it's okay, it's gonna be okay. It's okay. It's no big deal.
Because mommy does. Mommy says it's okay, and it's always okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's like, it's okay. It's okay. It's okay. Like, he's like trying to remind himself, like, if I take this pathway enough times, it's gonna be okay. But that shows consistency. And so it's like, we can't just say, like, you know, 8 times out of 10, if we're swearing and yelling because we dropped the smoothie in the fridge, right? Like, the kid's not gonna respond to those 2 positive times. And so it's like, it takes,
you're looking for the opposite, 80-20. And and that's what we're trying to tell you, is there is room for error. Cause I have not responded great every time there. I have had size, I've had whatever, but because consistently I showed up as, it's okay, no big deal. Right. But like one time I spilled hot chocolate in the car and I was literally like, darn it. And I literally just started sobbing. Cause I'm like, I have to clean this up now. I was really stressed. Yeah. And my son's in the back, mommy, it's okay. No big deal. Mommy, it's okay. No big deal. And I was just like, okay, yeah, he's right. You know, so like, and it's almost good that when they get to model it back for us, right? And be our model for how to align. So in those moments too, if you're consistently trying and then you don't even have a moment, you're going to notice they're going to model for you too. So it isn't very like they feed off of us and what we do and how we do it. It's very back and forth.
Totally. And even another example is, as kids get older, like I remember going zip lining with Adeline. Do you remember this? Mm-hmm. And I can't remember how old she was, maybe like 10 or so. And it was like, the what?
Something like that.
Yeah. And I remember I was freaked out because I was like, my anxiety was getting the best of me. I was like, I have to jump off this platform right now over this river. Yeah. Like, what? Like, and in my head, but in her mind, she's like, no, it's going to be fine. We've got this harness. It's going to be secure. We're going to be fine, mom. We try new things. You always tell me to try new things. And she goes for it. Right. And she had a grand old time. But so in my head, I was like, I need to model. I need to do this. I need to fake it. Right. Because like my kid's modeling what I have taught her. And so it's like, they pick up on it. We can help each other, right? Like Banks does, as they get older, to be like, okay, yeah, I can be brave and jump off this platform like my daughter did, because she's right. I've told her we try new things. We do things that are hard for us. And she did it and she had fun. Yep. But
and you're going to notice that they model for their siblings. Because now my son is going up to his sister, it's okay, no big deal. And she's and she's my feral one that doesn't care if she breaks anything, but he goes, it's no big deal. It's okay. You know,
and that's like, you're right, like, it's no big deal.
Yeah, she's like, I know. I own this world. But that's where it's beautiful when you start seeing the modeling work. So just think about, like, what's my reaction naturally, and is it helping or hurting? And that's what I'm always trying to ask myself, is my natural reaction, is it helping or hurting? And if it's hurting, is there a way that I can change that or alter it so that it doesn't hurt and it helps, right? Because me crying over the hot chocolate, I wasn't screaming at anyone. It was his hot chocolate. I felt really bad. I spilled it, but also darn, I have to clean this up. I was just really overwhelmed and really done at that moment. And my son comforted me and was like, that was actually helpful. He got to learn to comfort me, right? So that's where sometimes think about some of these reactions are okay. But if he's always having to comfort me, then that's not necessarily good modeling either, right? It's balance.
Right. Yeah, you got to figure out that balance on things.
Sometimes you do.
Yeah. 80-20 or however you want to look at it. I mean, 80-20 is a great rule for a lot of things in life, right?
80-20 is a really good rule for a lot of things in life.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how modeling works. And when we're talking about some of these coping skills that we'll give you, and the next one, we're also going to talk about just kind of lifestyles. Think about, as parents, what you want to embody or have in your household too. They go together, right? The environment and the vibe that you create in your day-to-day life feeds into how you model, but also feeds into the structure that they're getting. And we talked about in the first episode, environmental factors, stimulus, all these things feeding into our kids' lives. So it's gotten me really thinking about 90s parenting, which is such a funny term. I'm going back to 90s parenting. 90s. When you think about 90s, what do you think of?
As far as parenting or just life?
Just our lifestyle. What was the 90s like?
I mean, things were a lot simpler. I saw a nostalgic video, I think, the other day from somebody I followed on Instagram. And she was talking about it was a lot more outdoor play. And if you wanted an answer, you had to go get it out of a book. It wasn't just at the palm of your hands. There was a lot more time with friends outside and let's meet up at the park and collecting Beanie Babies from McDonald's and things were just a lot simpler. There was less overconsumption. There was less communication. It was a lot more intentional time with family and friends. It was just,
and you had to be really intentional about it. I saw this video of millennials running to each other's houses and being little kids or being the neighbor kids when you're little. She was running with her bottle of wine, I think, to her neighbor's house, knocking on the door, and be like, hey, Mr. Smith, can blah, blah, blah play? I don't remember what it was, right? And then she comes running on the stairs or come for wine night, and then she comes running and they go run off together and have their night. But I think that's the simplicity and also the ability to meet each other where we're at and the ability to not constantly be pulled at is huge. The first time that I actually thought about this with my kids was when my son, I had purposely let my phone downstairs and my son runs up to say, Mommy, you need this. And I was like, oh my goodness. He thinks I always have to have this thing attached to me. I don't. But what have I been modeling for my, I think he was 18 months at that time or something like that. And I was like,
it's not intentional.
It's not, because everything revolves around this. But I'm like, he loves dance parties and he loves calling his nanos. It's just on us because he has access to his people and dancing and all these other things. But I'm like, but I can also just tell Google and play something. I can also, so I've had to get kind of creative on I can leave my phone here and I can still do some of the things that he likes to do. And intentionally be we're checking out of phones at this zone and this zone so that he knows
But it's intentional.
It has to be intentional, which is sad that we have to be this way. So I think going back to the 90s thing and looking at the lifestyle of that time period, we can see what life was before technology really overtook us and pick and choose what we want, right? Because I saw this thing and I thought it was so funny. This mom did on Instagram a week with her kids in 90s week, where they literally went and lived they're in the 90s. They left their phones at home. They had a landline. They had alarm clocks with radios waking them up, all these little details, right? I thought that was so funny, but I'm like, that's really hard to mimic every day and actually have a functional life. Right. Yeah. But
have to learn how to embrace both.
We can't totally reject it. We have to do zones of it. And I think that's the key, is a zone of it. So looking at some of the lists, allowing kids to be bored, we don't really allow that to them to solve their own problems anymore.
And I'm always bored. I tell my kids, I don't want to hear the B word. If I hear the B word, I'm going to give you a task. And so they're like, oh, mom, be bored. I was like, being bored is a great time to find something creative to do. I love it. Is. It's a time to be creative. And they hate
it's a time to actually figure something out, but it is true. Right.
Yeah.
Cause that's what we did. Like, we filled our time with so many random things.
Yeah. And that's when they come up with, like, they're writing songs or, like, I'll find ants and draw and then, like, making his own Pokemon card deck from, like, drawing by hand or, you know, like, that's what we want. We want that.
Yes. I've also heard things talk about, I named this in the last one, which I think is funny, Montessori shopping. But letting your kid be, the concept that I think is really vital is letting your kid be a part of the situation or the experience they're having in that moment. Let them be present in the moment they are present in and be a part of that moment, right? Like, they don't need another device to pull them away. They don't need entertainment. They just need to be in that moment and included in that moment. And I think that's, I remember so many times my dad talking to somebody, I was standing there like, kicking a rock or turning in a circle or picking at the building, but I was in that moment. I couldn't just escape it. I had to sit there and deal with it. And I think that's something, like, be present in the moment that you're present and let your kids struggle in that moment and they will be fine.
And it's hard. Like, I'm working on that with my 10-year-old and it's, he gets super aggressive hard. About it.
It gets aggressive. But it's important. Yeah. It's really important. And I'm trying to make sure my kids are very much in the moment present kind of thing. It's very hard.
Yeah.
Independence. The term that, like, was brought up was like latchkey kid independence, but I think this concept's really hard, right? I keep hearing things like when I was reading Raising an Anxious Generation and a few other books that I've read recently, like parents can get reported for not being present enough in your kids' lives now. Like, if you let your kid go play outside, like, some people have called CPS on them or DHS in other states, which is crazy. But it's also like kind of the world we live in now, right? Like, you need to have eyes on your kids. So there's a balance to this of, like, how can we still empower our kids? How can we help them feel independent, but not have a safety risk either, right? Like, I feel like that's the constant balance we have to try and find. But, like, my kid, I definitely give him chores. I definitely make sure that he knows, like, he has his own cooking set where he can cut, and he's two, he's young. I know that. But, like, he can peel potatoes. He can peel carrots. He can cut
they're
things.
Plastic. They're like little
they're
kids.
They're kid ones, but he can still do it, right? Or, like, when we're cooking on the stove, we pull him over and he has been over a hot stove. He does know how to use a hot stove. And he also knows hers.
He learned.
I wasn't really thrilled about that one, Daddy, but it's okay. He learned. Yeah. Right. And that's the thing, though, is, like, he's getting independence, or he helps me unload the dishwasher. He helps me do things. Like, we don't actually let our kids do things for themselves, but as kids, we were expected to do that. And that's actually what made us thrive and have some accountability in our lives, which is interesting.
And there's certain, and I've been better at that in other aspects, I guess, of parenting, but, like, education wise, like, my kids are very, like, they've had more of a say on what they're doing for their education because they're homeschooled and, like, have really helped lead some of that. And so that's been helpful too, where it's kind of like a, this is your task, like, your education, like, you need to learn how to learn. And, like, they've had to own that. And it's been really cool to see it work, because then they're like, no, we see the benefit in this. We see the benefit in learning. Like, I want to read this history book because it gives me greater context for what's going on in the Revolutionary War. Like, I love that. That's where it's like, okay, it's a different type of independence, but I think finding those realms, like, for you guys, it's been so cute to watch Banks in the kitchen, and, like, he has that in the kitchen. And then for mine, it's like, okay, they're having more independence in their education, like, but finding those realms where you can teach them.
I think it's, when you were talking to it, made me really think, like, this is all parental preference and what you're comfortable with too, guys.
Exactly.
Just because you see one parent comfortable with that doesn't mean you have to be comfortable with that, right? It's what you feel good about, not what somebody else feels good about. And that's where, like, sometimes my husband, even, I feel like he's way good at giving independence. Sometimes to the point where I'm like, you're making me anxious. You know,
like, why is Banks over the stove? Like, that freaked you out. But
oh, 100%, 100%. My goodness. My 18-month-old is standing over the stove in his toddler tower and he is helping cook. What the heck? But then I'm like, that's good. It's good for him. Okay. You know, like, so again, some things are going to be extreme to others, but that's because we have the parental personalities and differences. It doesn't mean you're doing anything wrong. Pick in the zone that you feel comfortable in. And I think that's the key, is just intentionally giving them zones that they are independent, intentionally building that skill. But it's not going to look the same for every family, because, again, differences, different families, different lifestyles. Totally. It's fine. No judgments.
And it's totally, and, like, as a blended family now, right? Like, I got remarried, my husband has kids, I have kids. And the way that he gives his kids independence makes me super uncomfortable sometimes. And I have to, and, you know, and then he'll be like, oh, like, I feel like I should be doing what you're doing because you're such a better parent. And I'm like, no, it's not that we're better parents on these things. It's just, it's just different. Difference isn't always better. Like, And it's under one roof where my kids have less independence in some realms than his have, right? Like, but that's what I'm comfortable with. And it's okay. Like, different isn't bad. Yeah.
Free range play, like unsupervised time outside. I have a really, really, really hard time with unsupervised outside. I need to have eyes on my little kids.
Yeah.
But there's like the suggested age is like 8, 10. And I'm like, I'm sorry. I have a really hard time with that. I've watched too many true crime things. I know too much. I know what could happen. It doesn't mean it's guaranteed.
Let their 8-year-old ride their bike to the lake from our old neighborhood, right? And it was like, it freaked me out. But in her mind, she was like, no, this is great. Like, they're spending the whole day outside this summer. I'm like, they're playing in the lake by themselves and rode their bikes, you know, 2 miles up that hill. But it's like, again, it's like, you got to figure out what you're comfortable with. So like free range play is so great. How do you do this?
Do it within your realm of comfortability.
And
like yesterday, my free range,
their house around it.
Yeah. My free range yesterday was like, I was at the park with my friend who has kids the same age as me. And Banks was trying to climb up the structure that his friend was going up, and he climbed the highest he's ever climbed without mats or anyone. And then he needed me to come help him get him down. But like, to me, that was like a big deal. I was over by the swings. He was way on this other structure and I could watch him. But like, then he said, mommy, and I went over and helped him down. You know, like that's to me free range, because I can still see my kid and make sure he's safe, but he's still exploring. He's doing independent things. And like, you just got to remember your own ranges and what you're comfortable with. Cause I'm not comfortable not checking with my kid very often.
For me, like, I kind of disagree with the outline on this one where it says, you know, unsupervised time outside. I think it's,
you know,
it's time that isn't
They're really pushing it. Some studies and academics are really pushing this. And I have a really hard time with the unsupervised part. And I think that's okay.
Well, I think it's, I've read stuff too that has talked about like parent interference. And I think that's where I've gone.
Interference is a really good distinction.
Yeah. And so it's a good example, right? Like Banks climbing the tower at the playground. It wasn't interfered with by a parent. It was letting the child go to their own capabilities and abilities and push themselves at their own levels. Another way that I would do that.
And I didn't sit there and be like, be careful, you're going to fall. I just was like, you got this, go for it.
So in my mind, I would say like, there's benefits in, you know, not interfering with your child's play. And 100%. So like, if they're playing or like playing house, don't tell them how to play house. Let them play house how they want to. Like, don't, if they have a friend and they're playing outside together, don't go tell them what to do. The resources are all there at your house already. If you set up intentionally a house where it's like, we have the chalk, we have the skateboards, we have the bikes, let them figure it out. Like, don't interfere. And so I think there can still be a level of supervision. Like, I would sit in the back of my car and like work on my laptop or, you know, do whatever, read a book, like out on the porch. But it's like, I'm just there so they don't get abducted or hit by a car, but they're their own thing.
Their thing, like, dealing with their friends. Yeah. And I think that was a key thing too. And I've been trying to practice with my kids. They are not at an age where they can really do it. But like yesterday, I was getting ready for the day and I could hear them and they were watching the construction going by our house and they were outside watching dump trucks, right? And they were both in the chair and I hear squawks. I'm like, somebody's doing something to the other one. I'm not going to interfere right now though. Nobody is screaming bloody murder, right? And I could see what was happening too. I like peeked around the corner and Banks was bullying his sister to get off the chair and she was screaming at him, right? And I'm like, work it out. Work it out yourselves. And they did. Yeah, they worked it out themselves. She squawked at him and then she moved on. And I think that's some interference, like as parents, that we also need to let them figure out is communication with each other and how to work through their own problems. And that's where I see a lot of value in that, but not a lot of value in making sure my kid is not abducted, you know? Like,
yeah, I was like,
I'm gonna be outside.
Interference
is a great word.
Like, I really don't like interfere. That
one. Interference is a great word. Minimal communication. They couldn't always have people at them all the time, which I don't disagree on this one. I think that phones are a great thing to have access to, or like the Apple Watches when they're really little.
Right.
My husband was actually asking me what I thought we would do for our own kids. I don't get this advice at work because a lot of people are particular about it, but I think I will have my kid have like a dumb phone at 10 to 12, whether it's a watch or like just the way to call me, but no access to anything else. And then when they are at like 15, 16, when they're learning to drive, then they can have one social media thing. I have no idea what it'll be by then, whether it's Instagram or whatever, because things change so quickly. But then that's when they learn with me, and then it rolls out.
Yeah. And like I've done something similar to Adeline with that. And it seems to have gone okay. Like her phone's pretty locked down. She doesn't have internet access. She can communicate with people that I approve. Yeah. But it's building that trust with her. And like,
and the ability to use the phone and communicate with the phone.
And she texts all the time. And
I also will definitely take their phone away at a certain time of night.
Yeah. Mine has to get plugged in. Like if you're on YouTube, like she plugs in right behind me in the desk behind me. It can't go in her bedroom with the door shut. Like there's rules, right? But it's building the trust.
And that's where it gets rough. Like you don't need to constantly be held hostage by your phone. So yeah. I will definitely take it away.
A certain point. And I think that's okay. Like setting those parameters for the kids is good. When kids are left to do it all on their own, it causes problems. Like,
They don't know what they're doing yet. So we have to help them. Screen time wasn't structured. This is huge. But it was limited by default. And this is what I think about all the time. So again, this is Taylor, not what y'all have to do. My kids won't have an iPad. They have a phone they get to use on trips for the plane. They will not have iPads at home. They will not have access to a mini screen by themselves. They are going to have access to the main screen. So you can watch TV, but I tell Banks all the time too, I'm like, we've had enough for now. And he's like, but I want to watch more Mickey. And he's like, but it's done. Like you can maybe watch them later. I don't know, but like you've had enough for now, right? Let's go do something else. And I think that concept of enough isn't taught anymore. That monitoring of like, it's just like food. You've had enough food now. Let's move on. Are you full? Do you feel full? Do you feel satisfied? Like, and that's what we need to teach with screens. Do you feel good? Like, do you feel like there's another activity we need to do? Which there is. Like, let's go move on to that one. But we aren't teaching our kids to be satiated. They're stimming all day long, and we're not teaching them when they're actually done stimming. And I think having a handheld device in front of your face is really, really hard to remember that versus the screen is so far away. My little guy starts doing it naturally now, getting up and playing with his toys and stuff. He just is like, I'm done. And I'll be like, are we over the show? And he'll be like, yeah. And I'll be like, cool. And then I turn it off, and then I turn on music if he wants it, or I just let him go play outside or whatever it is. Like, cool, we're done.
Yeah. And it's hard. Like as a parent with older kids, it's just like figuring out that balance. Like, and I am not always great at it. And there's some days or weeks where I'm even worse at it. Right. But it's just like giving them those, you know, like before we could watch Arthur, right? Cause Arthur was on PBS and then Arthur was over and you move on. But like trying to give my kids, like I have the biggest time with my 10-year-old son, right? Like, he wants to be on there all the time because it's the release. It's like he's able to just check out. But I'm like,
it's easy. Yeah.
I want you to do these other things first. Like, there's no screens until after 3. And I want you to play outside for a half hour. Like, that's a new one I've added. I'm like, we moved to Eastern Washington. There's 300 days of sunshine. I want you outside in the sun. Like, you owe me a half hour outside every day. And then, like, you need to exercise. You need to read a book. But it's like creating those where it's not Arthur's on at 3:30 to 4, you know, where it was the default when we were kids. But now we have to create our, that's what's like creating our own.
Yeah.
That's where it's like,
but like, and I think that's where it's like, why can't we? Cause I now had the settings where it doesn't automatically play on the stuff that he watches. So it automatically stops. So I have to click the button, right? I have the remote. Yeah. So I have to click the button and be like, we've had enough. And he'll be like, yeah, we had enough. And he just moves on because his show has ended. So it's a great way to, instead of me stopping him in the middle of a show, Mickey ended. We're done. And he goes, yeah, we're done. I go play. I go do colors. And it's like, yeah, great. Like you came up with your own activity. Let's go. You know? But that's where it's so easy to keep swiping on a screen. It's so easy to keep engaging on a screen versus when we all can see it and we all know what you're interacting with. It's really hard to sell me on something else, dude. Like, we done, you know? And I think if you can set up your system more like how it was in the 90s of Arthur's over or whatever it is, like,
Sesame Street's over or whatever it is.
Yeah, it's done. No streaming endless content. That's huge.
Yeah, and there...
For all of us.
There are some kids, even, too, who it's like their whole communication is like, YouTube Shorts. Well, I saw some YouTube Shorts. Well, I saw this on YouTube Shorts. And I was like,
I literally, why are you on YouTube? About how much I hate YouTube. I hate YouTube with a fiery passion. And Mattson didn't even realize how much I hate it. And like, you don't understand. It's a stimming system. YouTube is literally built to keep you on there, just like Instagram. But parents think there's nothing wrong with it because it's kids' YouTube. Guess what? Crap still gets in on kids' YouTube, and it is still stimming your kid. It is there to keep them engaged. You are still sucked into it, and it's just mindlessly giving you crap. And it's not even a plot line. This is my biggest rule with my kids. There has to be a plot line to it, and there has to be education in it. Like, if it's education to go care now, like Paw Patrol, you're learning about elephants and you're learning how to go help other people. Mickey Roaster Racers, like, did you learn it? Where's the sheep or whatever? You know, like,
that's
fine. Or like showing him like the 90s cartoons. Yeah, like he's like learning things. It's not like a mindless plot line.
Yeah.
And that's my rant.
Video games or, video
games. I hate video games for that. I'm fine with video games. My son does play video games with my husband, but I hate when other people watch other people play video games. Why aren't we living our own life? Why aren't we going to do our own things? I don't, that's my rant. I don't understand it. It really frustrates me.
So, yeah, and that's a pet peeve for mine too. Like, don't sit there and watch.
Why are we watching somebody else living life?
Yeah, no.
Go live your own life. Go play the game yourself. Convenience food culture. This is interesting. I think we really switched to that and we're going back to Whole Foods. So that's one that I would definitely encourage parents to not do that one. Just go to Whole Foods. But
and
social norms.
It's easier to do Whole Foods too on things. Like, and one thing that I've really tried to do with my kids is the 80-20 rule. Like, you can still have, like, I'll take you out for a hamburger this week, but I want you to eat the other stuff too.
Yeah. I do think one thing though is there wasn't as much fear in the 90s, right? Like, if you look at our thing, like, you can wear helmets or not wear helmets. It's car seat, not car seat. Kids go walk to school alone. I think it's how we talked about things versus how we talk about things now, right? Like, my son, it's not even a conversation. We just put on his helmet when he rides his bike, and he knows that. It's not even like, your head's going to get hurt and you have to do this. It's how you approach it. That's the modeling one that I think is very important is, are you modeling fear behind the things that they need to do to be safe? Or are you just modeling that it's just a natural thing that we do? And it's just a part of the system, right? And I think that's where in the 90s, that's what it was too. It was just a part of the system and what we did, not something to be scared of.
Yeah. Yeah. They just, yeah. And it's cute because even Banks will go and turn on his little safety lights on his bike. Like, he doesn't think about it. It's just, this is what we do.
And it's not because something bad's going to happen. It's just like, this is just what we do, right? Or like, I put him in his car seat and he buckles up and he's like, mommy, you need to turn me. And like, because his car seat's a turn one. And I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot. And I turn him and it's just what we do. It doesn't mean that anything bad's going to happen. It's just the things to help us, right? I like the problem solving one. We already talked about that. They'll let your kids handle their problems and let them deal with issues.
Less intervention on things.
It's
hard though. It's super hard sometimes. Like, and I am guilty of that, especially at home.
Yeah.
But
let them work
it out. Yeah.
Our parents let us work things out. Let them work it out. The last one is stop hovering as much and stop overscheduling your children.
Yeah, there was this concept from one of the leadership education books that I have put my kids on, and it's the 6-month no. And I love this concept because it's so, first there's a 6-month purge. Okay. And so every 6 months you should go through and like get rid of stuff that isn't servicing you or your family anymore. It's taking space. And sometimes I do better at that than others, or I'll pick a space and like, okay, I'm going to clean out my office. Or, okay, we're going to clean out your closet or whatever.
Yeah.
But then the second thing that follows up with that is a 6-month no. And so this has been super helpful in my life. And like, cause Tay, like it's so easy for me to like overschedule all these good things, right? They're all good things, but then I'm like, we're burning out. And so it's like, if you write a list of all of the things that are taking your time or your kid's time, and then you start reassessing, like, is this actually serving me? And so like, right now is a natural time, like where I typically will do it with my kids. And I just had this conversation with Adeline the other day was, okay, what is not serving you? Where are your holes in your life? And I'm teaching her how to do her 6-month no at this point. And so I'm like, it's coming to the end of a school year. We're going to enter into this new season where we need to start re-signing up for things. What do you see isn't serving you anymore the way that it should? Like, where are your holes? And so she's reassessing and learning how to do that. And it's really cool to watch her at that point now, right? Because I've modeled it for her and she's thinking through things like, okay, I have this social gap and I would like to find more ways to connect here. Or okay, I have, Yeah. Letting them do
it's
that.
It's really interesting. I also was thinking about, I'm reading this book called Range, and it's, I found it through a neuroscientist who specializes with working with sports, performance people. And he, this is one of his favorite books by David Epstein. And it talks about how we need to have multiple specialties, because when you over specialize, then you become fixated and you become narrow-minded. So you can be amazing at like chess or something, but you will never outperform other people because you're so stuck in it and you can't take any other information in your life or any other things. You're not becoming a well-rounded person, right? So if you look at sports nowadays, we are forcing our children to specialize at a young age, 8, 10, right? Like insane versus 6, right? Versus when we were kids, we were cross-trained. Right? Like a lot of people played like 4 or 5 different sports and they would do all the different seasons and they weren't burned out. And then they would specialize finally when they were like going to college or in their upper years of high school. And that's where we're noticing there's becoming a decrease in ability to create and grow because we're having less information introduced to us. So the more that you specialize and the more that you overbook yourself and commit to one specific thing, but overcommit all the time, the less good you're going to be at multiple things. So I always tell my husband, I was like, we're raising a well-rounded human. We're not raising a specialized human. I'm not raising an athlete. I'm raising a human being. So I want my human being to be created with multiple areas. So I want him to have musical capabilities. I want him to have social skills. I want him to have time for play. I want him to have time for sports, like, but a lot of different sports, right? So like, I want him to be well-rounded, not a little athlete. And that's what we got to start looking at is what do we want?
Well, I think if you look at like that, like holistic approach, right? For like, what are your physical goals? What are your emotional goals? Like, what is your spiritual well-being goals? What are your, like, if you start pulling out, what is it, the 5 or 6 categories in those areas of your life, and then you're going to end up with a better, well-rounded human. Like,
Yes. I really like some of these though. Like, I think my favorite ones that have really stuck with me as I've been researching this is I really want to make sure that my kids learn independence and to handle their own problems and to problem solve and to be able to free play. I need my kids to be able to have creativity and be a well-rounded person and not to always schedule them out or control their schedule, but to have them figure it out themselves. And I think that's where a lot of our anxiety with our kids is developing more.
I agree. I could totally see that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's putting more pressure on them for needs to perform. 100%.
More pressure to like always do these things or always be scheduled out or always be controlled versus like, it's playtime. Go grab your ice cream right now, whatever you want to do. Tiny cars a million times down the ramp. Great, let's go.
Let's do it.
Sounds great. Let's go. So those are my 90s parents tips.
Yeah, with the 90s parents tips and just kind of that reminder of like just how your kids will model what their parents are modeling. Like hopefully they're good reminders. In our next episode, we're going to talk more about like the application on this and just like kind of parent tools in your tool belt for how you can actually help your children when they're having these moments where they're feeling more anxious. And so, again, if you have any questions on any of these, send us a message. We'd love to hear from you. Make sure things are kind of like clarifying, or we'd love to hear your thoughts too. Like, what are your favorite takeaways from 90s parenting? Is there anything that's kind of stuck with you that you're trying to bring back and the benefits that you've seen? So.
Do it for the 90s kids.
I love it.
All right, friends.
Thank you, friends. Thanks for listening.
Bye.